You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to the very last segment of our coverage of Feast Portland. It has been an amazing weekend. This is Heritage Radio Network on tour. We came all the way from Brooklyn to Portland for this fabulous occasion, and we're just having the time of our lives. So before we get started with a super all-star, crowded, amazing show, we want to thank our sponsors for making our coverage possible. Thank you so much to Le Creuset for putting this amazing podcast lounge together. We're so grateful. Thank you to Salt and Straw for helping us get out here and for all of the amazing ice cream. Thank you to Travel Portland and the Julia Child Foundation for Gastronomy and the Culinary Arts. We're so grateful. So I'm Hannah Forden, and I'm sitting around a table with some really amazing people. So I think it would be easiest if we go around the table to say who we are and what we're doing here at Feast.
Hello, I'm Liza Hamm, and I'm Special Projects Coordinator at HRN.
I'm Katie Reardon. I'm a co-founder of the Knightwood Society.
Michelle Batista, co-founder of the Knightwood Society.
There's an echo in here.
I'm Katie Mosman-Wadler. I'm Executive Director of Heritage Radio Network.
I'm Nate Collier from Le Creuset. Excited to be here.
Mike Hewitt, Recruit, Retain, Relax.
Dana Cowan, host of Speaking Broadly.
Here we are. This is my favorite part of the day at the end of a festival when our insane happy hour show cast outnumbers our live audience. We'd love to. Oh, but the enthusiasm is rivaled. Thank you. That's awesome. So what have we been doing here?
We've been eating.
We've been feasting.
It's called Feast for a reason.
Yeah. I was saying to Dana a minute ago, she was like eating a dumpling, and I thought, oh, that looks good. I don't remember what hunger feels like, but I don't think I have it. I don't have that.
I don't know what that means. I know what full feels like.
Yeah, but we do have some treats in front of us, so we're going to be enjoying another mega dose of Salt and Straw ice cream. I took a picture of all the flavors that we're going to eat, but we're also enjoying them out of the most like picturesque, beautiful summery Le Creuset stoneware bowls. Do you want to talk about the ice cream bowls while I look up what the flavors are?
Yeah, what makes them so good for eating ice cream out of?
Well, the little foot on the bottom is a great handle, so don't feel like it needs to sit on the table on its little pedestal. Just hold on to it. But, I mean, in reality, it's all about fun and whimsy here. The colors are great. Ice cream is fun. The colors of the ice cream look beautiful together. So it's all about the fun aspect.
Yeah. So we have sea salt with caramel ribbons, we have olive oil, we have chocolate gooey brownie, my favorite, honey lavender, and strawberry coconut water sherbet, which is vegan, but you wouldn't know it to eat it. It's very, very rich. We're going to eat some ice cream, we're going to talk about Feast, and we're going to talk to some of our incredible guests also about their work. We heard a little bit from Michelle yesterday about Knightwood Society and some of the really cool work that they're doing with Burgerville. We're going to talk about that a little bit more too. Who wants to start on ice cream? What do you guys want? What are you excited about?
I mean, I want ice cream, and I can't believe I want ice cream because it's really cold. And I think it's just not the ice cream, it's just Portland, my feet, particularly my feet that have been in the mud for the last 4 hours. But yeah, I'm excited for the caramel. And actually, Nate was describing the bowls, but I'm just going to go one step further because it's audio and the colors are so beautiful. Like, we have this sunshine yellow with a lavender purple ice cream, and we have like a flame red with a chocolate brown and a white, making it like a tan puddle together. That's beautiful. And then the absolute classic, like, white bowl and chocolate, and then like pastel central with strawberry. Is it strawberry?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Strawberry coconut and vanilla with this beautiful yellow bowl. So I hope you just got a sense of, oh, there's a green bowl with lavender. The colors are so pretty. That's actually why I'm going to eat cold ice cream with cold feet.
You should be a writer.
There's a lot of like psychology too that like... I was like, oh, no, I can't eat it. But then I looked at it, I'm like, okay, no, that's
I'm kind of right monochromatic now. Myself. Yeah. I'm going for the lavender honey, and then I'm looking up at Le Creuset aubergine color set up there, and I think that's what I'm doing.
The lavender honey is really lovely.
Should we share the good news about brunch today? We had such good brunch today. We went to Gato Gato for brunch, and there was no line, guys. I don't know what you're doing, Portland. I know that there was a brunch village, so hopefully you ate a lot of things there. But there are a lot of you in this city, and I don't understand why you are not all lined up at Gato Gato to eat incredible food. We had the one of everything special, particularly delicious, were the smoked uni butter toast with scrambled eggs, and the pandan chicken and waffles special of the day were just extraordinary. But we're trying so to get hungry again so that we can go over to Vaguely Spanish.
Yeah, we're going to go visit our Brooklyn friends, Aaron and Nick, who are from Cervos. We just had them on HRN Happy Hour a few weeks ago, and they got us really, really excited for Feast. So we can't wait to taste what they have cooking. Should we hear? I feel like we did this at the start of the festival, but I always love to hear what everyone's like best bites at the festival have been, because we've all been trying to get as many snacks in as possible. So, guys, any standouts? Michelle?
Ooh, go for it.
I'm going to stay on the Gato Gato train.
Yeah.
Their bite at Night Market, well, it was my favorite.
They're just
down.
So good.
Yeah, I like the... Patrick Fleming from Boki Bowl, his wonton at the night market was amazing because it was probably the only dish that had like a nice crisp fry and salty factor to it. A lot of the other dishes were rich and a little bit creamier or gumbo-like.
She doesn't like creamy things.
I don't
things.
Do creamy.
I'm going to put in a good word for creamy, which is that... it's chilly today, and I just went for a walk down to the other end of the Big Feast and wasn't really planning on eating anything. And then I saw at the corner of my eye, Rogue Creamery had a beer cheese soup with their cheddar, and it was the perfect sip of warm, creamy, gooey, just salty, like amazing richness. So that was definitely like a highlight of the last 20 minutes.
I'll go with two, I think, and one of them is sort of the circumstance. Last night at the smoked event, standing in a long line for some delicious Olympia Provisions meats and watching the fire dance, and the line wasn't moving very quickly, and out of nowhere, somebody came around with a tray full of cut smoked sausage to keep the line happy, and it was just right at the right time. It was hot. It was a beautiful sausage, so love that. And then on Friday night, outside of the festival, we got to do a dinner at Han Oak, and the hot pot with the hand-cut noodles was out of sight. It was so good.
Well, I think the smoky chicken burrito saved my life yesterday at Boulard. But then again, the fried quail at Quantrell saved my life the day before, so it's a tie for me.
I'm so glad you were saved.
So dangerous to your life.
Yeah, no, this is serious business.
Do you know what I've still been thinking about? I think it's way back from Thursday night, Maya Lovelace's Scrapple.
Oh,
and I
that
really
was so
I
good.
Haven't had Scrapple in ages. It was very like warm and nostalgic. I thought that was the best bread I had all weekend.
Yeah.
Well, I have one more too.
Oh, go.
Sorry.
Go.
Did anybody go to Melty Fest? I don't think anybody, you guys didn't go to Melty. Michael Scalfo's fried wonton with Tillamook cheddar and roe on top. I could have eaten like 10 of those.
I love him. He's such a great chef out of Boston. So I don't know if it was the cold feet, but the chicken dumpling from Afuri, is that how you pronounce it? Yeah. Was spectacular here at the Big Feast. And I think it's so hard to do great food at a in a Big Feast format. So like hats off to them. And I feel like every single moment of every single day, I've had something extraordinary. So I like what Katie said, which is like, in the last 20 minutes, that's the most amazing thing I had. I mean, Aaron Franklin, who's here doing barbecue, like you can't really get better than that. Yeah, all good. Drinks at Bar Norman. You didn't ask about liquids, but I just want to say the PetNat Pet Sounds was fantastic.
Just a fabulous liquid, really.
Just a really fabulous liquid.
Yeah, and drinks in the future, I'm really, really looking forward to trying Dan Peterson's Mexican-style lager tonight at Vaguely Spanish, which is going to have this chili salt lime rim situation happening, which is really just speaking to me. Even though it's a dreary day, that I'll drink that anytime, any weather.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Burgerville?
Yeah, I really would like to hear more about burgers. We're eating ice cream, and it seems like a natural extension to make this like the best little kid birthday party in the world is to now talk about burgers. So, ladies, take it away.
Oh, gosh. I'm looking at Katie, and Katie's looking at me.
Okay. Well,
I feel like
we
talk about Burgerville a lot these days, which is a great thing because we're really excited about the work that we've been doing with them. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. But Burgerville, when you live here, Katie was born and raised here. I moved here 20-something years ago. And when you live here, and especially if you're born here, it is part of the fabric of your growing up. And so it's very nostalgic. And so when you talk to people, you often hear, you know, gosh, what happened to Burgerville? I love Burgerville, but I haven't been in a long time. Or, oh, I wonder what they're doing. Or, oh, I've gone in for that Mary and Berry shake. We do all of these limited time seasonal shakes. And so when they came to us last year to ask, Katie and I do a lot of consulting under the Knightwood Society, which is our event space and experiential and creative incubator. We were like, okay, well, let's sit down and talk about values first, because that's how we start every project. And we just thought, well, it's right for the region, and we knew we could make an impact. They have 40 stores, started in 1961. And I thought, okay, there's no better regional project than something like Burgerville. And we work with a lot of little brands, and they're beautiful, and we love them, but this was a way to make a bigger impact to food and farm and ag in our state and in Washington.
Yeah. I mean, as a kid growing up here, Burgerville was the place you went after every wet, soppy soccer game, which looks a lot like what we did today.
Like
so it was definitely, you know, it's a cornerstone to growing up here. And one of the things that's really important to us, to Michelle's point on values, is their supply chain is predominantly only local. So to be a 40 restaurant locations and have a supply chain that's predominantly only Pacific Northwest, I mean, how can you say no to a project like that? So it's been amazing.
And what sort of perspective do you guys feel like you're bringing to the table with your background from creating the Knightwood Society, which is just an amazing institution here in Portland? I'm sure that Burgerville, as another local institution, is really excited to share ideas with you. So, like, what sort of fresh and innovative projects are you focusing on? And, like, what's the direction that you're trying to take the company in?
Mm-hmm. Well, Michelle and I both have backgrounds in product and product design. So for us, when we were brought into the project, we really started through the lens of prototyping, which was super fun because for the brand, they just really hadn't had an opportunity to evolve their menu in quite some time. So Michelle and I just really, we took our, you know, had our chef, Sarah Schneider, with us, who's a part of the Knightwood as well, and we started playing. And having the best ingredients from some of the most amazing suppliers enables you to make amazing things. And so it was super fun just to play with in our own kitchen and experiment with. I would say one of the things that we brought to the forefront of the project too is the story. Really, you know, Burgerville has an amazing story and legacy, again, in the Pacific Northwest. And they used to tell these really funny ads when we were growing up and sort of not abandoned it, but kind of needed a reinvention. So this burger is really the gateway for that. We like to call it the Trojan horse for sort of the Burgerville 2.0 journey.
Did this consultancy start as sort of a generic, like, refresh ask, or was it targeted to, like, did Burgerville come to you and say, we need a regenerative ag burger?
Yeah, they came to us and said exactly that, pretty much.
such an awesome thing to be able to respond
right?
to.
Yeah, that's like the dream phone call. Hi, can you help us make the world better? Thank you.
it was funny because they actually came to Knightwood to plan an event. I can't remember what the event was.
It was like in, I don't know, know. Some may.
And then we were at, we're all heavily involved in politics in the state. And so then I wound up at a political event fundraiser in which two of the people that work at Burgerville were at. And then they said, wait, you're from the Knightwood. I think we're planning an event with you. And then we started talking. And by the end of the night, they had so much information that they didn't know before. And they called a couple days later and said, you know, we really want to commit to the region and work within a structure of regenerative agriculture and regional restoration. And we need help. Like, can you help us? I mean, that was the original ask. Yeah. And we said, yeah.
And one of the most fun parts, to your point on the dream ask, was, you know, Michelle and I talk about all the time how the term sustainability just isn't pushing the limits far enough. And this idea of regenerative agriculture through food actually is a huge enabler for bringing people to the forefront into the conversation. And that's been really interesting because some of our purveyors and providers, right, like they are located in parts of Oregon that are really rural and very conservative, and you start to talk about climate change and carbon sequestration and all of that, it gets political fast. And this project for us was about meeting people where they are and bringing forth great tasting, amazing food, and then having the conversation about why it's a better product. So it's actually sort of the reverse, which has enabled us to move a bit quicker and faster too.
And I know that we're all talking about the burger, but I have to just talk about shakes for a minute.
And the fries.
Can I just talk about the shakes for a minute?
We don't have enough ice cream going on. We need more.
Yes. So Burgerville has 5 shakes on the menu that we call them 365 shakes. You know, chocolate, strawberry,
vanilla,
mocha perk. I'm missing one. And those live on the menu all of the time. And then we have LTO, limited time offer shakes. So in season, strawberry, Oregon Marionberry, hazelnut. And this year, after we started this burger project and we started pulling everything back, like, what about this? What about this? Is this local? How can we make this better? We committed to doing a completely regional 365 shake menu. And so we're launching new ultra local shakes next month. So all of the 365 shakes are built with local ingredients and local products. And so even if, like, chocolate, obviously we don't grow chocolate here. And so we're working with Holy Cacao, which is a local chocolate sauce maker, and we're going to have Oregon strawberry year-round. We're flash freezing the strawberries and making them into a puree. And so that's when things started to really get super exciting, because it's not just a product anymore. It's the whole menu.
Yep.
Again, I just didn't think I could ever be hungry again, but this conversation is pushing me over the edge. Since we're talking about product development, I would love to kind of turn the conversation to our friend Nate from La Crusade. We're surrounded in our studio. For those of you listening from home, you should check out our Instagram, because you can kind of see the amazing color palette that we're surrounded by from La Crusade. So we're kind of talking about, you know, product development from the food side, burgers, shakes. Tell us about the colors we have going in here and what we're looking at for the newest season of La Crusade products.
Sure. I mean, it's funny. We sort of parallel a little bit the shake strategy on a longer timeline. And we've got a core portfolio of colors that everybody expects and kind of reacts to. And then we've got limited, but on a longer horizon, colors that might last for a few years, might last for a few months. Sometimes that's very strategically planned and sometimes not. But Dana, I love listening to your conversation with Tyler earlier about his process for the salt and straw flavors. And it's amazing that's all coming from his head, really, which is crazy because we work on it with a lot of people over a long time. But, you know, we take into consideration cultural trends and fashion way outside of food, you know, fashion, geopolitical, what people are dealing with in their lives and how they want to react to colors and turn that into, you know, he was talking about not jumping right to a flavor. And I think that's sort of, it's taken us a while to get there. We don't jump right to a color like, oh, blues are going to be big next year. It's like, what do we want them to feel? What do we want them to react? And it starts with a palette, really, of colors. And so how does that palette speak to people? And then we'll pick and choose from there, you know, what we need to represent that's currently in our palette. So we've got our Cerise Red and Soleil Yellow and Palm Green and, of course, White here. And bringing new colors into that, how does that change the perspective? And then from there, obviously, what's possible or feasible at the factory level? We're dealing with elements that have to get melted together, and our blues start out pink when they get sprayed on, and then they get heated so hot they turn pink. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. These are chemical engineers that are doing crazy, crazy things. And so there's that. But we try not to start with those limitations first. You know, we give them a really wide brief and come back to see what they can do. And the more freedom we give them, they get really excited about it. Instead of just saying, this is the exact blue match we want, involving everybody in that process. So it's really, really cool. I love hearing you guys doing the hyper-local stuff. And, you know, we can't get there, but we do have a reaction, a color for everybody or every sentiment. And we pride ourselves on being able to offer everyone's favorite. Everyone has a favorite flavor or a favorite strawberry season or peach season that they're waiting for. And it's the same with color. It's all personal reaction.
As a product designer, I got to tell you, Le Creuset is one of my favorites. And it's one of those things that I have so much of it in my home. And I use it every single day of my life. And
same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I look at it and it makes me really happy. And so thank you for that. It's a really special thing to have.
I love to hear that. And I think it rings true a little bit to how you were saying you're approaching the regenerative farming thing. You're coming with like really good food that hits the mark first, and then you have that conversation. And so we want to deliver great product that cooks well over and over and over again consistently, and then you're talking about colors. So it's not a trend thing. It has to envelop everything together. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I think it's really interesting that you introduce colors that don't have to have a long life. You know, because when I think of Le Creuset, I think of the classics first. But then seeing the new introductions, I think it's such a smart marketing decision and great for people at home to have something that like resonates right now, because for everybody, everything in their kitchen is not forever, and there's the style in their kitchen is not forever, the home that they're in isn't forever, and Le Creuset can be forever, but it's also really interesting to me that it can be something that like is of a moment.
Absolutely. I mean, of course, it's easier and cheaper to swap out your pots and pans than your whole kitchen, so we love it when people want to do that, but I think part of it too is just, it's approaching it from wanting to explore all those colors, or a chef doing a menu because he wants to explore a certain flavor profile, and not everybody's going to like it, you know, but people are going to talk about it and they're going to think of him at the forefront of things because he's pushing those boundaries. So, you know, I'm not necessarily charged with driving a lot of revenue. I'm doing a lot of the communications work. If people aren't buying it, but they're talking about it and it positions us as a color leader at the forefront of that conversation, even better. Luckily, they buy them and they like them too on top of that.
What's the most controversial color that you've introduced in the last 2 years? So divisive, like some people love it and some are like, that is like, why did you do that?
I mean, I think probably 3 years ago when we came with hibiscus pink, which is a baby pink, which are very popular in the Asian market. I won't get too much into, but market by market, how that whole, you know, palette thing changes. But it was very controversial internally whether we were going to do that, and to the point that we didn't launch it on its own. We kind of packaged it with a bunch of other colors because people were afraid to hang their hat on it. And it sold okay, but it got tons of conversation. It rode that millennial pink train a little bit, which wasn't necessarily the forefront of the goal, but that was probably the most controversial, and I would say internally more so than externally.
I mean, now that we're talking about colors, I will come out and say I have a mishmash of Le Creuset at home. I have red, I have white, I have green. It's all good. Quality stuff, different colors. It still looks good, though.
Yeah, I do too, and I encourage people to mix and match colors all they want.
I just, because we're speaking about product design, I also thought we should tell the story of how Team HRN became like mega fangirls of Nightwood Society. And this was like a funny thing that happened at the Fancy Food Show 2 Januaries ago, where Liza and I were walking the floor. Has anyone been to the Fancy Food Show? It's like, yeah, it's huge. It is madness. It's so overwhelming. You walk through and there's like a zillion vendor booths and you see a lot of people you know, and you're also just like trying to talk to everybody and see everything, and it's like totally limited. So Liza and I are like running around like crazy people through the Fancy Food Show in San Francisco, and we see this bag. I'm going to hold one up. So we see somebody carrying this really cool bag. For those of you at home, it says "The Future of Food is Female." It's like a really cool font. It's beautiful. Like,
canvas tote bag, right? And it has this very suspicious NWS at the bottom. So Liza and
mysterious.
I were like, "Do you see that bag?" And we're like, "Let's get closer. Let's follow the bag." So we're like,
"We kind of stopped.
Like, it's creepy." We're like walking a little faster. We're like, "What bag is that? Whose is that?" And so then we're like 1 foot away from the bag, and Katie turns around. And there's these two like weirdos like up on her tote bag.
You guys are creeping.
We were creeping so hard, and we were completely, entirely, utterly busted.
And I have to say, as a member of HRN who was not at Fancy Food, that bag preceded both of you. Like, I just met you this weekend, but when you guys got back with those bags and like the little buttons, I was like, "Where did you get those? Oh my god!" And they were like, "Yeah, so cool, so cool, so cool." And then finally meeting you and being like, "Oh yeah, you guys are like even cooler than the bag."
Yeah. Like, so suffice it to say, it went well enough that we like came back to the office with bags and pins and not restraining orders, and we like played it off pretty well. But we were being so creepy. But it was such a fortuitous meeting, because it turns out that like Nightwood Society is so awesome of an institution, and you ladies are incredibly powerful and awesome, badass examples of women supporting women. And it was just like so amazing that we got to connect. And I also like already felt like I've known you forever. And anyway, this was like the story of this very, very, very special bag, and how we came to be acquainted. But it was really like meant to be all along. But we're very lucky that we have like a few of these tote bags here. I understand that Michelle has prepared a few questions, or Michelle and Katie together. Who knows the answers? Do you both know the questions and the answers?
Yes.
So and what can happen?
And since there's not a large audience, like two people, HRN should answer these questions as well, because you should have more tote bags in your life.
Okay. It's true.
Because Dana doesn't have a tote bag.
I don't have a tote bag. Incredibly
and Mike really wants a tote bag. And Dana doesn't have a tote bag.
I want my 8-year-old daughter to carry that to school every day.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, also, wait, right before the questions, speaking of daughters and amazing printed materials, can you just like give a shout out for the shirts?
Oh, I have two daughters that'll be 11 and 13 next month, and they are little entrepreneurs, and they have a t-shirt company called Tiny Feminists, and tote bags and pins and buttons and things. So yeah, follow them on Instagram, or they have a little website. So yeah, they're rad. Yeah, they're awesome. They get to be surrounded by amazing women constantly, so it's a pretty good life.
Yeah, I mean, they're like up and coming entrepreneurs, way, way smarter and more sophisticated than I am now in my early 40s. And sometimes I listen to them, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna write that down. Okay, keep going. Yeah,
Tiny Feminist totally was actually birthed at your house during the election.
Oh well, that's a whole nother.
We're not going to talk about that today, though. Just so you know.
Okay, well, like, I'm ready to win.
I wish we had a buzzer.
I've been coming in
the table
for like a year.
Yeah, okay. Okay, we're going
to
ask.
This is also open to the audience. Yeah. Trivia
time.
The coolest tote bag ever.
Okay, some Portland trivia. How many bridges are in Portland proper?
Be right back.
No Googling allowed. Put your phones away. Any guesses?
9.
12.
7.
I was going to say 12.
You
got
it.
I got it.
Katie got it. You could gift that to Hannah if she doesn't get the other.
We'll see who is.
Wait, it's the best out of 5 or something.
I have more bags. Oh,
okay. You can pry this out of my cold dead hands.
We have 5 bags.
I've already got, so we can keep going.
You want to go?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so let's do this. Let's name something that Portland has more of per capita. Anything? Any guesses? What we have more
strip clubs?
Capita? That's one of them. Yep. And
there's another
one.
Chance.
Ooh.
What is it?
Ooh,
no.
That could be. I don't
but that's
know.
Not the one on our list.
Dispensaries.
No, but good call. No.
No.
Anymore. So we've got strip clubs.
Breweries.
That's.
Breweries. Oh, 2 for 2, friend.
Do I
good
win?
One. Good one.
You what?
No, name one.
Oh my God. Yes.
Okay. Here's an easy one.
Wait, how do I tell my daughter that I just won that because of strip clubs?
Leave that part of the story out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The future of food is female.
Yay.
Right. That's all we need to know here.
Just tell her how you won it. Here's an easy one. This one's for the crowd. Hold up, Hannah. What Portland donut comes in a pink box? Got it.
Oh my God.
My friend from the audience. What's your name? Awesome. Johnny.
Congratulations,
nice.
Johnny.
Good job.
Okay. One more?
Good job.
Sure.
Katie?
We can sweeten the deal on this last one. And also for any of our winners who are interested with a sweet, sweet HRN enamel pizza pin.
Or a t-shirt.
Oh, it's
or
really,
a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Oh, we could definitely throw a t-shirt.
Oh, the stakes are high.
Yeah.
That
oh,
is
yeah.
a good looking pin.
It's a good
pin.
All right,
good
so seriously, okay. this is, yeah, this is a whole.
That's a prize.
This is,
extraordinary this is for the win. Hannah?
Babe.
All the marbles.
What is Portland's oldest nickname?
Rose City.
The Rose City!
That is so close. I will give you a hint. There is a coffee company named after it.
Stumptown.
Stumptown.
Now everyone gets a t-shirt because I'm so happy.
Hannah, you've won an HRN t-shirt of your own design.
And also, before I forget, I don't know how much time we have left, but thank you so much to Le Creuset because you guys... crushed it with the Knightwood this week. We had so much beautiful product for our dinners. We did have, just for the record, fun fact, more feast activations at Knightwood, more feast dinners, lunches, classes than any other venue in Portland.
And how many was that, Michelle?
This year we had 7 on site. Wow. So 4 dinners, a lunch, and 2 classes.
How many days is feast?
4 days.
Okay.
And then we also fed everyone at the Chase VIP lounge at the night market. And then we had 5 Burgerville activations. So what is that? 14?
So you're feeling really relaxed and chill right now is what you're saying.
I'm ready for not springs. I'm ready for a soak.
Yeah, I think it is well deserved. This is going to bring us to the wrap of our coverage of Feast Portland. Before we go, I need to say a gigantic thank you to probably the biggest hero of the entire broadcast all weekend, Jeet Paul.
Woo!
Thank you, our awesome engineer. He has been in that corner for the entire 2-day duration of the big feast, making us all sound great, supporting Bon Appetit and Ladies Who Travel, and just doing a total kick-ass job. Thank you, Jeet. You are the best.
Yeah. Jeet, like, didn't get a snack break, didn't get a bathroom break, because you were like, we have to squeeze all these interviews in. And
no food,
like,
no water.
Yeah. Jeet's like, such a trooper. Thank you so much.
Yes. Killing it. And giant thank you to all of our partners who made our coverage possible, most especially Le Creuset. Thank you for helping us create this incredible studio. You guys are awesome. We love you.
Pleasure's all ours. This was amazing.
Thank you, thank you, thank you to Travel Portland for supporting the build-out of the studio, for supporting HRN and our coverage. Thank you, Salt and Straw. Oh, my God. We ate so much ice.